We are sponsoring an area-wide meeting this year in 2019, the end of July, last weekend of July 2019, and the topic for that study is going to be on fathers. And the idea behind that is we solve a lot of problems if we get fathers doing what fathers are supposed to do in the home. If you travel across this country, churches far and wide, there's leadership issues, leadership challenges. We solve a ton of those leadership issues and leadership challenges in our congregations if we solve a father problem in a home and a father challenges in our home. I want to talk to you this evening about leadership and the importance of leadership. Now, I want to tell you this isn't just a father's, although it's applicable to fathers, but mothers have a leadership responsibility in a home. Everybody in this room, for the most part, has leadership responsibilities. If you're a young person here, you have leadership responsibilities. Everyone here, with the exception maybe of our young, small, infant children, are leading someone. And we are in the process of leading someone. And the question is, how are we leading them? And I want to recognize, spend just a little bit of time focusing in on the importance of good leadership and the importance of including those traits in our life and in the type of people that we ought to be. I want you to look at Matthew chapter 15 and verse number 14. Jesus is speaking. He said, "Let them alone. They be blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch." You know, one of the things this verse teaches is that everyone leads someone. The question is, where are you leading them? And there are some people that are leading and they're influencing, but they're influencing in a negative way. And I want to encourage you today to make sure that you're using your influence and you're using your leadership in a way that is going to help those that are following behind you. But let's talk about principles of effective leadership. The key there is effective leadership, because if we're leading them into a ditch, that's not going to help us. So, principles of effective leadership. Number one, effective leaders involve others. They delegate. And I just want to use some biblical examples of this. We're also going to look at some scriptures related to elders and deacons. I'm not specifically talking about elders and deacons, but the principles of leadership that are involved in those scriptures related to the work of an elder, the work of a deacon. But in this case, effective leaders involve others. They delegate. I just want you to notice Acts chapter 11 that we've recently read. Barnabas went to seek out Saul. If you recall, after Saul's conversion, he went up and basically went back to Tarsus after he had traveled around for a little while. He went back to Tarsus, and Barnabas was going to go do work up in Antioch. But when he was in Antioch, he realized that Paul was at Tarsus. He went up to Tarsus, brought him back from Tarsus to work with him with the first Gentile church at Antioch. He involved other people in the work. Barnabas worked with John Mark. Paul worked with Timothy, Silas, etc. We need to recognize how important it is to involve others in work, how important it is to think about other people and their involvement in the work, because effective leadership is going to be able to delegate, is going to be able to involve other people involved in the process. Number two, effective leaders lead moral lives. Your leadership will be undercut if you're making bad moral choices. It affects us in a national sense, in our case of a president. It affects us in the case of our leaders in our community. If we are not moral people, it will undercut our leadership. And I want to especially talk to our men, and I want you to recognize how important the moral choices that you make are to your leadership in your home, to your wife and to your children. And they are directly related to your ability to make good moral choices. And I just want you to notice these are some of the qualifications given to that of an elder. 1 Timothy chapter 3, 2 and 3, blameless, sober, of good behavior, not given to wine, not greedy of filthy lucre, not a brawler. Hebrews 13 and 7, remember them which have the rule over you, who have spoken unto you the word of God, whose faith follow. They ought to be such people that you could follow their faith, considering the end of their conversation. Conversation's an old English term that means the way they live their life. You consider the end of the way they live their life. That means as younger folks, you ought to be smart enough to look around you and see how older folks have ended up. You ought to be able to look at the decisions they make and be able to say, how did that end up? Did that end up good or did that not end up good? Did that end up well or did that not end up well? We ought to be smart enough to look and recognize that bad moral choices did not help that situation. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse number 27, I keep under my body, the Apostle Paul said, bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I preach to others, I myself should be a castaway. Even the Apostle Paul recognized the possibility that he could fall. He recognized his frailty. He realized he had a responsibility in leading others, that he didn't want to be a castaway just like the people he was preaching to. And he wanted to keep his body in subjection. And I want to tell you that's a challenge for a lot of people, to be able to keep their body into subjection, to control what they're doing with their body. But leading a moral life matters when you're trying to influence other people. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse number 11, Apostle Paul again said, lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. Paul recognized that Satan could get an advantage. If we don't live a moral life, it's going to affect your ability to lead other people. Effective leaders have vision. I know you're going to recognize this passage, Proverbs 29 and verse number 18, where there is no vision, the people perish. And I recognize people say, well, that was prophetical vision, and I get it, and you're right, but I still believe the verse is applicable. If you do not have godly vision, the end result of that is not good. You, as parents, as moms and dads in your home, ought to have godly vision for your family. You ought to be able to look down the road. You ought to be able to see past the nose that's at the end of your face. And you ought to be able to see what's going to happen and what your children need or what your wife needs or what your family needs. And to be able to look at the long haul and say, I need to make certain decisions that I get to the bigger picture here and make decisions down the road. Effective leaders put other people first. They love people. If you don't like people, if you're not in the people business, you're going to have a difficult time influencing people. You have a difficult time leading people. 1 Timothy chapter 3, 2 through 3, talking about the elders again, give it a hospitality, not covetous. To be a covetous person, that I would want what's in your pocket in my pocket, that's not loving people. That would hurt someone else to benefit me. Titus chapter 1, verse number 7 and 8, not self-willed, but a lover of hospitality, a lover of good men. Not self-willed, he's not about himself, he cares about others, he cares about the success of other people that's around him. That's good, effective leadership. If you're just worried about yourself and that's all you're concerned about, you're not concerned about anybody else around you, you will be awful at leading other people. And let's talk specifically to our dads. If you're about yourself and you're worried about what you get and how things happen for you and everything else in the world revolves around you, you're not good for being a husband. You're not good for your wife. You're not good for your children. You're not good at leading them because you're about yourself. You're not caring for others and making decisions for the benefit of other people. Effective leaders train other leaders. We talked a little bit in times past about legacy and the importance of leaving legacy and how important that is. It ought to be important. It ought to be important to all of us. We ought to be thinking in terms of making decisions that leave legacy. I hope I leave the world a little bit of a better place behind me than what it was when I came. It ought to be a goal of ours. And part of that is training other leaders. It's training others. In the case of my family, we had children that we raised up in our home. It's important to train them, that you're training other individuals to be the kind of people they need to be to lead. That don't raise up a bunch of folks that follow everything that happens out there in the world. Train up individuals that have the backbone and the responsibility and the knowledge and the characteristics that God wants them to have. Because effective leaders are going to train other leaders. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse number 2, the things which thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. There's an individual one time that said, who shall be able to teach others also? 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 That's what you do when you train other leaders, is they train other leaders. We leave a legacy behind. There's going to come a time that Ty is lying in a casket, Lisa's lying in a casket, and the question is, what kind of legacy do you leave behind? Do you leave children behind that are the kind of people that God wants them to be? Or have we squandered the opportunity of leadership in our home? Maybe as a congregation is a leadership. Did we squander an opportunity of leadership to train other leaders, or did we effectively try to inspire others to be the kind of people they need to be, the men they need to be in their homes, the mothers that they need to be in their homes, etc.? Because effective leaders are going to train other leaders. Effective leaders believe it can be done. You ever sat in a meeting and people go, well, we did that. We've done that. We tried that. Didn't work. I've sat in church business meetings and people say, well, we need to go talk to people about coming to church or inviting them to a meeting, or we need to do some door knocking or those kind of things. Well, a true story, we passed out 23 flyers back in 1968 and we just didn't see any response from that. So we just don't think that's very effective. Wow. Kind of went overboard there, didn't you? I mean, 23 flyers in 1968. Wow. It's amazing. Just think of the effort and the diligence that went into that. The law of large numbers, 23. Very good. Point is, effective leaders believe it can be done. If you ever sat in a room, I tell you, there are people that have influenced me in a very positive way. One of those is Herschel Williams. And I can tell you a million good things about Herschel Williams, but I can tell you that nearly every meeting I ever sat in with Herschel Williams was a voice in the room going, well, let's do it. I think we can do that. Let's make that happen. And I don't know how many of you know a lot of the history of some of the congregations in this area, but you can talk about Baytown, 1940s. We could talk about Beaumont, and I'm not saying there's not others involved, but I'm saying that Beaumont in the late 50s and early 60s. Talk about Channelview in the 60s, late 50s, early 60s. We could talk about Pearland in the late 60s. We could talk about Lake Jackson in the late 60s. We could talk about Spring, Texas in the 80s. And every conversation, I probably have left multiple ones out, but I'm telling you, I can tell you one person that sat in the room in every one of those discussions about starting congregations in those areas. And his name was Herschel Williams. And you know what Herschel said? I think we can do that. I think we can work on that. Let's get after it. Let's move stuff around to try to make that stuff happen. But you've always got people who sit in every meeting and they say, oh, there's no way we can do that. That's impossible. We tried that back in 1968. Now, don't get me wrong. Herschel's seen some failures along the way, but he's seen a lot of successes along the way because he believed it could be done. That influences a young man that Herschel was 90-something when he died. I think he died in the neighborhood of 9 or 10 years ago, so I was in my 40s. At the time he was in his 70s, I was in my 20s. That's how I was being influenced as a young man from a 70-something-year-old man at the time when I'm in my 20s. But he believed it could be done. Very positive spirit about doing it. And we have a tendency sometimes to, there's no way we're going to be able to do that. Have you ever said, door-to-door work? I remember one time somebody told me door-to-door work doesn't work. Don't get me wrong, it may not be the most number one, most effective way, but at the time they told me, it was very interesting. I was going to church at a place, we had five families meeting with us in the church that specifically came from door-to-door work. And they're telling me it doesn't work. It's just, what you're basically telling me is, you're not willing to do it. That's what you're telling me. Because you don't know whether it'll work or not, because you've never done it. It wasn't that long ago I sat in a particular meeting in North Texas and somebody said, none of this town is interested in the gospel anymore. None? Zero. There's absolutely no one interested in the gospel in this town. Do you believe that? When people have that kind of an attitude, do you believe that spirit? That's important. Number one, he doesn't know what everyone in that town believes. He's not tried to talk to everyone in that town. He's given up before he's ever tried. That's the I can't attitude. I can tell you in raising kids, sometimes you'll have experiences with kids where it's just, I can't do that. I can't do the math. I can't do the English. I can't. Well, I can guarantee you what you won't do is you won't do it with that attitude that says, I can't. You'll never get anywhere with that attitude. Now, you might have the attitude of, I will do my best, and I'll give it everything I've got, and I may fall short of that, but I give it everything I got. Justin Springer used to use an illustration in his five-part study. He would talk about, who would you want working for you? Say you're a farmer and you're planting cotton, it's time to harvest, you need some people to pick cotton, and you've got guys out there, and you say, I need you to pick 100 rows of cotton, and the guy says, there's no way I'd pick 100 rows of cotton, so he sits underneath the oak tree and sips lemonade all day long. And another guy comes up, he says, I need you to pick 100 rows of cotton, and he says, well, I can't pick 100 rows of cotton, but he picks 68 rows of cotton. Which guy would you rather have working for you, the guy that got 68 rows of cotton picked, or the guy sitting under the tree drinking lemonade? You go, well, if I need cotton picked, I'm going to take the guy that got 68 rows done, because it's the guy who believed he could. You know, there's Bible stories about that. You may recall the children of Israel, they sent 12 spies out in the land. And God said, you're going to overtake this land. You remember 10 of the spies came back and said, there's no way we can overtake this land. Two of them came back and said, we can. Do you remember those two have lived in the annals of history? And you remember their names. Tell me the names of the other 10. It's going to be hard to do. But you can tell me the names of the two. Those two believed it could be done. If we don't believe it could be done, we've given up on the fight before we've ever got into the fight. Effective leaders don't dictate, they work. It's real easy for people to get pride of prestige or prestige of position, or they get caught up in ordering, and there are dads that do that. There are fathers that do that. They sit in the lazy boy chair and they order everybody around. And I'm telling you, that's not good leadership. There are elders in the church that sit back and they just order people around. That's not good leadership. Good leadership is going to be willing to do the work, going to be willing to put forth the effort involved in it. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse number 1, qualifications of an elder, says he desireth a good work. Didn't say he desireth a good position in the church, or he desireth a good prideful position, but he desires a good work. He's got the work in his heart. He loves the work of the church. Effective leaders communicate. It's a challenge for folks a lot of times to communicate. But effective leaders are going to communicate. They're going to talk. They're going to share. And they're going to try to discuss and help each other along the way. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse number 2, qualifications of an elder, apt to teach. Titus chapter 1 and verse number 9, qualifications again of an elder, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayer. 2 Timothy 2:24, talking about an evangelist. The servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness, instructing those that oppose himself, if God peradventure would give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. Good, effective leadership is going to care about other people and want to train other people and want to teach other people the things they need to know. And I want to tell you, moms and dads, you know what you need to teach your children? Everything they need to know to be successful in life. Moms and dads, you know what you need to teach your children? Everything they need to know to be successful in life. You're going to teach them about finances. You're going to teach them about making decisions on clothing. You're going to teach them about decisions of spiritual things. You're going to help your children understand. You're going to communicate. You're going to talk to them. And I can't tell you the number of families that never talk. They never communicate. They don't lead. They don't instruct. It's as though we had children so children can raise themselves. Children need instruction. They need guidance. They need to know the parameters. They need to know where the borders are. Yes, that is okay to do. No, that's not okay to do. You use living examples to teach your children and say, that's the reason we don't do that. They need to know the whys behind the rules so that they understand how life works. That's what children need. And you know where they get it? From leaders. They get it from moms and dads specifically. You guys know that we're a dad-led home congregation. I mean, we believe that as a congregation. Our dads need to be leading their homes. And we have abdicated our leadership if we're raising up children to lead themselves. And we're not even caring for them, nurturing them, teaching them, training them. There is something wrong in the family if that's happening. Effective leaders lead by example. They don't just order other people around. They're going to be doing the work in front, right? 1 Timothy chapter 3, 4 through 5, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity, for if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? And let me ask you honestly, tell me, if a person it does not and has not done it in front of you, does that honestly affect his ability to lead you? And I think if you're honest with yourself, you're going to say yes. That affects leadership. If you can't do it in front of me, don't tell me to do it. Don't expect it of me if you're not willing to do it in front of me. And let me tell you, every one of the fathers that's in this room and mothers that's in this room, you're instructing your children certain things about life. You're teaching them, we're going to do this, we're not going to do this. We're going to make decisions this way, we're not going to make decisions this way. We're going to teach them everything you need. And if you won't do it in your own life, this whole business of do as I say, not as I do, does not work. It won't work. You've got to lead by example. Effective leaders don't lead alone. They surround themselves with good people. Now, in my generation, an example of that to me is Ronald Reagan. Now, Ronald Reagan, I'm not trying to get onto politics. I'm really not. You can stand wherever you want to politically. Most people, though, would recognize that Ronald Reagan was a good, effective communicator and a good leader. Whether you agreed with his politics or not, he motivated people. He moved people. Most people would recognize the leadership qualities of Ronald Reagan. I don't know how many of you remember, but Ronald Reagan fell asleep on the Pope. He wasn't a good leader because he fell asleep on the Pope. They had the Iran-Contra scandal, and he basically said, I didn't remember. I don't remember. I don't recall. And they were going, well, why don't you remember? He said, I don't know. And he asked his, the story is that he asked his people around him, well, why, what happened with this? And they said, we didn't tell you, President. And they said, why not? So we give you plausible deniability. He said, well, I didn't remember that happening. He said, see, you had plausible deniability. I don't know what all happened in the background, but my point is, it wasn't just Ronald Reagan. If you remember, he had Baker, and he had a lot of other people, and he was well known for putting good people around him in good places that took care of responsibility around him. And guess what, Dad? You don't lead alone either. And I can tell you, of all the people in my life that help me, or that's the closest companion to me of anybody, and there are folks I love dearly and I feel very close to, but the closest person I feel close to is my wife. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse number 2, one of the qualifications of the elder be the husband of one wife. And I can tell you, you don't lead alone. You can sit there and think you're king of the mountain all day long. The reality is you need a team of people, and that team needs to be working together to accomplish the goals that are set forth in the family. In the case of Lisa and I, our goals were four daughters. We wanted them to grow up, and that we wanted them to mature, and we wanted them to be educated. All of those decisions that you make in life as parents. But I didn't do that by myself. I had help. You surround yourself with good people. I can tell you some other things, and I know I've mentioned other names, and some of this may be a little bit sentimental, and I apologize for that in some ways, but I can tell you one of the things we did was surround ourselves with good people from the standpoint of other friends and things like that that we incorporated in our life that we wanted to be a part of our life. Justin Springer was a very close friend. Many of you know that. But let me tell you the kind of friend Justin was. We're driving down the road. We picked him up in Channelview. We headed toward Beaumont for a gospel meeting one night. We picked up Justin to ride with us just to enjoy the company. My girls are in the van. Lisa and I are in the van. My girls are talking about getting married someday. You know, it was just girl conversation. You know what Justin said? Justin said, you know, the person that you want to marry is the person that'll help you get to heaven. See, you surround yourself with good people, and they'll give your kids good advice. That's good people. That's not people that get caught up in childishness and all of the sidetrack stuff. And I want to tell you, I appreciate good people that have been in our life that have helped influence us and influenced our children and influenced our family in positive ways. I want to tell you, leaders, husbands, you don't lead by yourself. Effective leaders believe in what they do and who they are. Talking about that of the deacon in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse number 9, they hold the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. Somebody would say, I don't know what the mystery of the faith is, or it's a mystery to me what the mystery of the faith is. I didn't know there was a mystery. It's a mystery. Well, they tell us in verse number 16 what the mystery is. Without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh, justified in the spirit, preached in the Gentiles, believed on the world, was received up into glory. You want deacons that don't believe that? You want elders that don't believe that? See, effective leaders are going to know who they are. They're going to know what they're about. They don't change with every wind of doctrine. They know what they're trying to accomplish. And dads, you ought to be able to know what it is you're trying to accomplish, and you ought to be able to work toward that. It's not about you going fishing, and it's not about you going and playing, and it's not about you. It's about your long-term goals of what you're trying to get accomplished. That's effective leadership. Titus chapter 1, verse number 9, holding fast the faithful word as he had been taught. 2 Timothy 3:14, but continue thou in the things which thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned them, and that from a child thou hast known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make thee wise through unto salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. 2 Timothy 1 and verse number 12, for the which cause also I suffer these things, nevertheless I'm not ashamed, for I know whom I believe in. And I am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. I know whom I believed in. Fathers, do you know what it is you're doing? Do you know what you believe in? Husbands, do you know what you're doing? Do you know what you believe in? Are you working toward keeping those goals in front of you? That's effective leadership. You don't just change every moment, every waking moment. You know where you're headed. You know what you're trying to accomplish. Effective leaders are courageous. A 19th century preacher named Peter Cartwright was preparing to deliver a sermon one Sunday morning when he was warned that President Andrew Jackson was going to be in attendance, and he was asked to keep his remarks inoffensive. During that message, he included these statements. I've been told that Andrew Jackson is in this congregation. I've been asked to guard my remarks. And what I must say is that Andrew Jackson will go to hell if he doesn't repent of his sin. After the sermon, Jackson went up to Cartwright. Sir, the president said, if I had a regiment of men like you, I could whip the world. Isn't that true? You know, the reality is, if he doesn't repent of his sin, he will go to hell. And you know what's true? If you don't repent of yours, you will too. We got to have the courage sometimes to state the things that are true. We've got to have the courage at times to tell our children the things that are true. We're not trying to hurt a feeling. We're not trying to be insensitive. We're not trying to not have tact, or we're not. But your children deserve to know what's true. They need to know what's true and what's not true. They need to understand how life works. If you're a father in a home, you've got a responsibility to be courageous enough to lead that home and teach them the things they need to know. Effective leaders, I know this one is deep. You know what effective leaders do? They lead. You know what lead means? That means you're not checking to see which way the wind's blowing. You're not trying to be the most popular person that's in the room. I can tell you there's some times in our home when my children did not like me. They loved me, but they did not like me. I was not the most popular person in the room. Because you don't check to see which way the wind is blowing to make sure there's enough people that's popular that think that I'm doing the right thing here. We know what we're doing. We know where we're going. We know how we're going to get there. And you cannot like me all day long, but the reality is this is what we're doing. You lead. You know, on any given morning when our kids went to school, it's our day kind of went like this when our kids were in public school. 6 o'clock in the morning, an alarm clock would go off. And Lisa would go in there to the kids' room, to the girls' room, and she would say, Amy and April, you need to get up. Need to get dressed. School's fixing to start. I'm going to have to get you to school. Elizabeth, you got to get dressed. We got to go to school. Hannah, got to get up. Come on, darling. Got to get up. It's time to get up. Get dressed. We got to go to school. And Lisa goes into the kitchen. She starts preparing breakfast for four girls. Let me tell you what I can guarantee you would never have happened in our home. Girls, do y'all want to go to school today? That was never an option. Do you know why? Because number one, if you took a Democratic vote of that situation, we would have been outvoted 4-2 every morning. They would have never gone to school because kids don't want to go to school. That's why they have parents. That's what parents do. That's why they have leaders. Leaders are teaching them that they need to know some things, even if they don't know that they need to know them. I know some of you are sitting or have sat or sitting in algebra classes, and you're sitting there going, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Or solve for Y, and you're going, I don't know why I need to solve for Y. That makes no sense. Who cares about A squared plus B squared plus C squared? That makes no sense. But I can tell you, at your age, it makes no sense. But I can tell you, as you get older, you're going to see some places where it absolutely makes sense. I can tell you, years later, I sat next to a foundation. I would have never guessed when I was 15 years old I would do house inspections. Or I would look at foundations. I wouldn't have guessed that. I didn't have that planned. But I can tell you that there is called the 3-4-5 rule in foundations to check for a foundation to be square, and as opposed to cattywampus. It's square, a 90-degree angle. Do you know how you check for that? A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And all of the sudden, the things that you're being taught as a youngster, you're making application to as an adult. And if you're not listening to those things as a youngster and learning those things as a youngster, you will never understand later in life how those applications could be done, because you're going to sit there at the foundation and go, duh, I have no clue. I don't even know what square means. I don't know what 90 degrees means. I don't know what a 90-degree angle is, because we never learned it to begin with. And my point is, there are things you're being taught young in life that your parents are teaching you because they know you need to know. They're looking ahead. They're thinking ahead. They're saying, we're taking you to school every day because you need an education. You need to learn these things. I recognize reading's boring and school's boring and life is boring and everything boring. I get it, because school wasn't intended to be exciting. That wasn't the point of it. It wasn't trying to be a video game. It wasn't trying to be a roller coaster at Astro World. You know what school is? School's a time to learn about A squared plus B squared equals C squared, which sometimes at 14 years old sounds boring. But you know what leaders do? They lead. They know what you need. It is foolishness for children to grow up and have to learn what it is somebody that loved them should have taught them. We need our fathers standing up. We need our fathers leading their homes. We need our moms leading in their leadership role in a home and teaching their children the things that they need to know. Leaders lead. Have you ever looked at the story there in Acts 15? I guess we're going to read it next Wednesday night, the Council at Jerusalem. It's very interesting to me what takes place at the Council at Jerusalem. You've got leaders from churches in a lot of different places all coming together to make a decision based upon some problems that were happening in the early church at Jerusalem. Some of those things had to do with the Gentiles being grafted in. And at the end of that decision, if you read through the Council of Jerusalem, the end of that decision was they ought to be accepted. And there were some stipulations, like the eating of blood and some things like that, that we weren't going to accept. But at the end of the story, the Gentiles need to be accepted in. That was not necessarily winning a popularity contest, because the Jews at large probably didn't like what was happening with the Gentiles being brought in. But they were willing to do the tough decision. And they went and they left there and they went to the Gentiles and they rejoiced for the news that they heard, the decision that had been made at Jerusalem. Hebrews chapter 13, verse number 17, obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that's unprofitable unto you. Do you know, children, your parents ought to be able to lead you with joy, not with grief. You should not be giving your parents a hard time. Your parents ought to be leading you with joy. Your elders ought to be leading a congregation with joy. Fathers ought to be leading their homes with joy. There ought to be joy in that, not with grief. You know who really it hurts? If your leaders are leading and it's grief for them, there's always people who make it grief. Do you know who that hurts? It hurts you. It's unprofitable to you for leaders to lead with grief. You don't want leaders leading with grief. You want to help leaders lead. I'm a part of a networking group that I've been a part of for about 8 years or so. It's called BNI. And I was kind of amazed being around some of the people. It's a lot of type A personalities in the room, a lot of alphas in the room. And I was very impressed very early with the organization, because there'd be a president of the organization and other people in the organization would say, if you ask me to do that, I will serve. I'm there. And I go, that's amazing. That had not been my previous experience of leadership. And at some point in time, they asked me to serve as president of that group, and I called a guy, and I said, hey, I'd like you to be vice president, if you don't mind. He said, I would be happy to serve. I will serve with you. You have asked me to serve. You're going to be president of our group. You've asked me to serve. I will happily serve. You go, wow, what an experience. That is amazing to me. It wasn't that long ago. We're about to transition new leadership this year, and in October the leadership changes, and there's a guy by the name of Todd Reynolds that's fixing to be our president of the group, and he came to me and he said, you know, I'm concerned about you, honestly. That was what he was talking to me about. He said I've been told that you're kind of the grandfather of the group or something, you know, kind of deal. And he said, I just want to know if I've got your blessing in leadership. And I said, if you lead our group, I will serve. Whatever you want me to do, give me a job to do and I will help. More than happy to help. I want him to lead with joy and not with grief. You know why? It's not good for our group for him to lead with grief. Michael Jenkins has been president of that group in years past. And I don't know what his experience is. I think if you asked him, I think you would find that he found the same thing I found. He found people that were willing to serve in roles and responsibilities that took time and effort and energy. And it makes it easier to serve. It makes it easier to lead. Most of us don't want to lead because we're afraid of the responsibility and everybody dumps on you and all that. It's not supposed to work that way. It's supposed to have help. That's the way leadership's supposed to work. You ought to be able to help them where they can lead with joy and not with grief. Effective leaders get results. I've got one story related to this, and years ago, it's kind of a long story, but there was a congregation that was trying to get started, and they couldn't get a facility, couldn't get a place to meet. And I mean, they were thinking they were going to meet in a school building, and the school had told them no several times and all that. And there was one particular guy that said, I'll go talk to him, and he went, and he came down with a key to the school. I don't know what the deal is, but there was something special about this guy that he could get results. At the end of the story, he could get results, and he came down with a key to the school, and that's where the church met, in that school building. And I'm just telling you, we can be people that say, oh no, it can't be done, there's no way, it's impossible, all that. We can do that all day long, or we can be the people that try to get results. I'm not guaranteeing you'll always come down with a key, but I'm saying it's a mindset. It's a mindset that says I'm defeated before I start, or I'm going to make every effort I can to accomplish the goal. Titus chapter 1, verse number 9, holding fast the faithful word as you've been taught, they may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and convince the gainsayers. Now I will tell you, as elders in the church, there's going to be times that elders' role is to protect the flock. And there's sometimes going to be people that come in to destroy a flock. And I can tell you, those are awful times for elders, because they have to do some things that's not fun. And it's because they're trying to protect the flock. But I can tell you, sometimes it's not that the elders are trying to guard and protect or run off the wolves necessarily. They're actually caring about the souls of men. They're trying to exhort and convince the gainsayer. The person that isn't necessarily trying to destroy the congregation, but they absolutely don't understand. They've got a misunderstanding of Scripture. They're about self, and the leaders are trying to exhort and convince them. They're trying to correct that and loving them and caring for them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the conversation is an easy conversation. It doesn't mean that it's not blunt. It doesn't mean that something doesn't have to be said that's true. Just saying that the motive behind it is to make sure that the unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision whose mouths must be stopped, at the end of the story, it's got to stop. It's destroying the group. Can't do that. Effective leaders are going to get results. They're going to put a stop to it at some point in time. Effective leaders take responsibility for their decisions. It's very easy in our society today to blame everybody else for everything that happens. It's mom and dad's fault. In fact, if you've ever heard of nuthetic counseling, there's a guy by the name of J.E. Adams that wrote a book on biblical counseling, and it's interesting. There's a million things I agree with the guy on. I mean, it's a fantastic book. But part of what he talks about in this counseling is that you take responsibility for what you do. And that's the first principle of being the kind of person to be a mature individual, is to take responsibility for what it is you do. You made decisions, you take responsibility for those decisions, good or bad. Sometimes it doesn't work out exactly where you want it to, but you made the call. And he said, now I'm basing this on clear biblical principle that all men are created in sin, etc. And he went into a Calvinistic type approach, which I totally disagree with, but was kind of interesting to me. It was so counterintuitive to the point he was trying to make, because what he was essentially saying was, you take responsibility for your decisions, but if it doesn't work out that way, blame mom and dad, blame your genetics, blame something else. So in essence, you're not taking responsibility for your decisions. It's kind of counter to what it was he was trying to teach. But he's right in the teaching. We've got effective leaders are going to take responsibility for what they do. Not every decision comes out right. Not every decision works out right. Not every decision is the perfect decision. Sometimes you're making judgments about things. Sometimes the judgments can be wrong. Dads, you're going to make mistakes along the way, but you're going to take responsibility for them. I promise you, as a father, I've made mistakes. As a husband, I've made mistakes. I promise you, there's been times I've been on my knees and I've said, I'm sorry for those mistakes. I promise you there's times, but effective leaders are going to be responsible for their own decisions. And I want our dads to rise up. Take responsibility for what you're doing. Don't just let your family go. Don't just let your family do their own thing. Your children need instruction. Your children need you. They need a mom. They need a dad. You've got a responsibility because you're going to give account. This verse is about elders giving account, but anybody in a place of responsibility gives account for the things that they have charge over. It's called stewardship. You've been blessed with a lot of blessings. You live in America. I wonder how we're going to stand on the day of judgment and account for the stewardship of the things God has blessed us with. I wonder how we're going to do that. Because I'm telling you, folks, we have been so blessed. We've been given so much. And you know, the Bible, there's a Bible principle. It teaches, to whom much is given, much is required. If anybody has responsibility and accountability, and all, it's us. Every one of us has responsibilities there. Effective leaders are willing to go through the fire. It's not going to be easy at times. But you're going to do it even when it's hard, when it's painful, when it's challenging. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, the Apostle Paul talks about a lot of the different things he went through. He received 40 stripes, saved one. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck, a night and a day I've been in the deep. Journeyings often, in perils of waters, perils of robbers, perils by my own countrymen, and perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, and watchings often, in hunger and thirst, and fastings often, in cold and nakedness. And I've got a headache, I can't do it. Effective leaders are going to do whatever it takes to get it done. I think about that from a standpoint of being on the job sometimes. You know, there's sometimes, even in our line of work, there's jobs that just aren't easy. there's easy jobs, don't get me wrong. There's times when it's kind of easy. You just kind of go do it and boom. Don't get me wrong. I'd love every one of those days to be those kind of days. I'm looking for the easy stuff too, just like you are, right? But you know, there's some days you have to put on your boots and you have to do the hard stuff. It isn't easy all the time. Some days there's jobs that just have to get done. There are people that go, well, it's 5 o'clock, gotta go. And there are people who say, it's 5 o'clock, but I've gotta get this done. I have to do what has to be done to accomplish the task. And we struggle in our country, we struggle in our homes, we struggle in our families with that ability to let leadership quality that says, I'm gonna get the job done, whatever it takes. We're so easy to give up, so easy to quit, so easy to go somewhere else, do something different. And I want to tell you, sometimes maybe personalities get crossed or whatever. I can tell you, it ain't easy to go say I'm sorry. It ain't easy to listen to someone else saying they're sorry and saying I forgive you for what it is you're saying I'm sorry for. But I can tell you, effective leadership is going to do what it takes to get it done, whatever that is. Effective leaders love the lost. You know, the Apostle Paul said, besides the things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. He was concerned about everything that happened out there, the folks separated from the gospel of Jesus Christ, whatever it takes to get the job done. Effective leaders don't just talk, they do. There's a lot of talkers in this world. I mean talkers. You get in the construction industry, guys will tell you they can do anything. And then they start working. It don't take you very long to go, ain't got a clue. Hadn't ever done anything. But boy, in the interview, he could do everything. There's a lot of talkers. You know what the Lord's looking for? People that don't just talk about it, but they actually live it. They actually do it. They actually know what it takes to get it done. 1 Timothy 3, verse number 1, that of an elder, if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work. Effective leaders have wisdom. I can tell you that's a very difficult thing to teach. From an elder standpoint, not a novice, sober, strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses of exercise to discern both good and evil. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. You know, effective leadership shows wisdom. Your parenting, your as a dad, as a mom, you need to have wisdom in your home. You need to make application of knowledge in a way that's wisdom for your family, wisdom for your friends. Be careful how your mouth runs off and the things you flippantly speak about. Be careful. Don't get me wrong, I'm preaching it myself. I've told y'all this before, but I'll tell you again, sometimes your strengths are your weaknesses are your strengths. I can tell you that I'm a talker. Y'all know that. I love to talk. One of the blessings, one of the strengths of my personality is I don't mind talking. So I can go knock on a door and talk to someone. I can sit at a chamber meeting and talk to people around the table. It's a strength of mine. But let me tell you, it's a weakness of mine too. Why is it a weakness? Because I'll put my foot in my mouth. I'll say something I shouldn't say. I'll sometimes not be wise at times when I need to be. I'll make a mistake with the things I say. I have a lot of admiration for Daryl. Daryl's kind of a quiet guy. He's not as quiet as he used to be, but he's a quiet guy. And there's a lot of admiration for a guy like Daryl. He's very meek, gentle, and soft-spoken. He just doesn't say a lot. And I can tell you that's a strength for him, but it's also a weakness for him. Why is it a weakness for him? Because that which is a strength to him keeps him out of trouble. He doesn't say a lot of things he regrets, but it can be a weakness to him because he doesn't want to sit at a chamber meeting and visit with the people around the table. Our strengths are our weaknesses are our strengths. It's true for all of us in a lot of ways. But I'm telling you, all of us need to be working on wisdom and showing wisdom and being wise in what we speak and how we speak. Leadership decisions affect people's lives. We don't need to ever forget it. The decisions you make as a father and a mother, they affect people. They're affecting your children. They're affecting your home. You do not make decisions in a vacuum. No one does. They affect people. Elders in the church, when you're making decisions, it affects people, it affects things. Be careful the decisions you make. For a long time, the Swiss had a lock on watchmaking. They built the best watches that money could buy. And by the 1940s, they produced 80% of all the watches worldwide. In the late 1960s, when an inventor presented an idea for a new type of watch to the leaders of a Swiss watch company, they rejected it. In fact, every Swiss company he approached had the same negative reaction. Believing his design had merit, the man took it to a company in Japan. The name of the organization was Seiko. The design of the watch was digital, and today 80% of all watches use a digital design. Be careful the decisions you make. They affect things. And let me tell you, one decision can change the entire course of one's soul. The decisions you make in your home as dads, as moms, can affect your children for a lifetime. Dad can't get along with mom, mom can't get along with dad, let's get a divorce, let's use the D word. And let me just recommend to you that not be in your vocabulary. Don't get me wrong, I recognize I'm talking to a group of 100 people, and I recognize life happens, I get it. But I'm not preaching at you today, I promise you, I love you, and I'm sorry that you've gone through the pain and the hurt. But I'm telling you, the decisions you make affect people. I've been in it. My home's been in it. My family's been in it. I get it. I get the pain. I get the suffering. But I'm telling you, be careful the decisions you make. They affect people. You do not make decisions in a vacuum. And I cannot tell you the number of times I've sat across a table from a young mom or maybe a young dad or whatever says, well, I've lived for other people. Now I'm going to live for myself. No, you're not. You might be, but you're not going to be effective at leading your home doing that. That will destroy your home, living for yourself. If you're a mom and you're living for yourself, I live for other people all this time. Now, I'm sorry. But I'm telling you, you're fixing to destroy your family is what you're fixing to do. I want to beg of you, I want to plead with you, be careful the decisions you make because they affect things. They affect people, and one decision can affect the eternity of your children, of your wife, maybe of you.